Hmm? Ah! Hmm.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. My name is Alex.
And I'm Lizzie.
And this is What Is From, a podcast dedicated to the epics show From. And this week we're going to be covering season one, episode seven, All Good Things. So, how you doing, Liz?
I am doing pretty good. How about you, Alex?
After this episode, I am pretty friggin' fabulous because it scared the bajungas out of me.
Oh my God,
and I loved every second of it.
I know. It was so good.
There was so much meat on the bone that finally we got what we were. It was a nice payoff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that there was some really scary parts and there was really some nice parts and it was a really well-rounded episode. I can't wait to watch the next episode to find out the ramifications of everything. But yeah. What are some of your thoughts since I said a couple of mine?
Yeah, I was waiting for sexy time to start between Jim and Tabitha. I was like, woo, you know, down in the basement in a bunch of dirt. But as we suspect, it hasn't been confirmed fully yet. Maybe it has, because I think Julie just suspected, maybe Tabitha confirmed that Jim and Tabitha were getting a divorce after this trip.
Right.
And so I think this this situation is bringing them together and is, I think it may even be bringing them some healing in regards to Thomas and their entire family situation, because each of them have a job. She's digging a hole. And he is making a radio, you know,
pretty
and
much crying. They have their daily what to do.
Yeah. And but instead of, well, I mean, you know, couples often go off and do their job so that they can keep the house going, you know, but this is just different because what they're doing, their lives depend upon it.
Mm-hmm.
So
but I also think they're kind of rediscovering their relationship a little bit.
Yeah, I think
through
so
this
too.
Crisis. And I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But before we go any deeper in the hole, so to speak, why don't you start your first point of the episode?
Okay. I look at these as two different points. I'm just going to talk about my first point about Father Cotry. He is a character that I like. And up until this episode, there was a little bit of, I don't know, shiftiness and doubt about him. I don't think fully believe in his piousness. I think until Tabitha brought over the pages of the Bible that he had written down, because there's no Bibles in the town. And that's when I started to come around thinking, all right, there's something about that, you know, this guy is a priest possibly. So he tells the story of how he ends up there, which I loved, because we only know really Jim and Tabitha and Donna's story, unless I'm forgetting somebody, you know, how they actually got there.
No, you're right. I mean, I think Sarah had said something about their story, but not much. I mean, we don't know that much about anybody's story.
Yeah, because Donna's was pretty detailed. we know the Matthews family pretty detailed because we were there. And now we have Father Cotri, who he, you know, it starts out as a regular day. He's getting ready for services at his church when a young boy shows up and, you know, the boy needs him, but Father Cotri doesn't see that and sent, you know, gives him a candy bar and sends him home. And then, you know, all hell breaks loose and he goes to the house and he's found that the boy is dead. And, you know, he couldn't help the boy. The boy's blood is what is all over Cotri's shirt. And, you know, it kind of explains the alcohol, the guilt that he felt. So he wanted to tie one on. And, you know, in he is doubting his faith. He's doubting his purpose. And then God talks to him. He's standing on a bridge. And God talks to him and says that, you know, he told him to get back in the car. There's another path for him to follow. And then 2 hours later, he's in from. And that is really a different path to follow. And if you're him and you end up in a place like that, what are you thinking?
Exactly. Like, what did he do or not do to get himself stuck there?
Yeah. And like others, he's grieving. He's grieving the little boy. So that seems to be our theme here.
There is a lot of grieving or
guilt.
Guilt or some kind of emotional baggage that people are bringing into this world.
But it's not light emotional baggage. It's like serious stuff.
Oh yeah, no, there's definitely suitcases that go with this baggage.
Yeah.
It's definitely, you have to pay the extra money for the airport.
The extra poundage. Yeah. But
what really I love about talking about him was he did all that. That wasn't the weird part. It's that Sarah figured it out. Like, she drew the candy bar wrapper and triggered this whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. For him.
Correct.
It, you know, just brought out proof, because I'm sure he was questioning why he ended up there. Why there? Was there, you know, was that really God speaking to me? And we still don't really know. That could have been anyone giving Sarah that message.
We'll be right back.
Ever wondered what it takes to make it in the movie business? Peel back the curtain with 4-6 Success Filmmaking. 4-6 Success Filmmaking is where filmmakers share their stories and the secrets.
It's beyond competitive out there.
There have been movies that it's taken me 10 years to get made.
Don't wait to create. Like, you've got to just keep making stuff.
Tune in to 4-6 Success Filmmaking for your dose of cinematic realness, direct from the voices that have lived it.
We still don't know. It could be the monsters. It could be just
it could
about
be the
anybody.
Devil. Because if he's at his lowest point, devastated over the death of his boy, of this boy, he's ripe for the picking for the devil to talk to. Unless he knows, and we don't know this, and we won't know this unless he wrote it down or something, unless there was kind of like a code or an identifier that, you know, that was God that was speaking to him. So, because it's like, I've learned to listen to my intuition. It took a long, long time and a lot of mistakes. And it sounds different from the I want voice, you know, like, well, I really want to do this. It doesn't mean it's the right thing for me to do, but it does sound different and it's negligible only to me. So what's your number one?
My number one is The Party. Let's just get right into it, because
I know,
who doesn't?
I was wondering if we were going to start there or not.
You know what, folks, I always screw up the numbers, and I know she's trying to keep me on task with the numbers.
My dude, number, I don't even keep track.
My numbers one through whatever are The Party.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. It was a real...
That was quite a party.
You know, they partied like it was 1966.
Drink it, smoke it, screw it. that was the party.
You start off with Ellis wanting a pregame.
Oh my gosh, you start there.
What
pregame with Victor?
I mean, well, that was the best part. So you have Fatima, and then he's like yelling at those two because they're party poopers. And then he gets the one guy that would be the last person you want to pregame with. And and basically Victor's like, go away. I want to be alone.
Yeah. He just was not having it. But I was thinking about it because, yeah, we're looking at Victor and he's a grown man, but he's kind of a kid.
Absolutely. He hasn't grown.
So it's like Ellis is trying to get a kid drunk.
Absolutely. So we have Ellis, who's first off, it seems like Ellis is just being a jackass. And of course, Fatima being the absolute glue that runs the whole entire show, makes a very good point. You know, it's exciting for her because it's survival.
Right.
But for other people, it equates to death and loss.
Yeah.
And anytime you do have an anniversary of any kind, it's never a good thing. So you have that. Before the party really starts, I believe there's something, an important kind of scene between Donna and Victor where...
Yes.
He talks about, she's like, there's no more peaches. We have fruit cocktail. We've got this, we get that. And Victor says something that I find really fascinating, which is everything has changed, but the peaches have never changed. I know I'm saying the line wrong.
Well,
but
it doesn't even matter because this, I think people might take it as a throwaway line.
Right.
You know, but it was, I have it underlined that this is the one thing that hasn't changed. A lot of things change, but then, you know, exactly what changes is he referring to? I'm like trying to figure out the right word.
I have a better question than that.
Yeah.
How the hell do you have 50 years worth of peaches in there?
Yeah.
That's a whole nother issue.
Well,
but
that's a thing, because maybe magically they were appearing.
Right.
Because
along with the cows and the eggs.
Yeah. With the cows and the chickens, that maybe they were magically appearing, that every time one was taken, another one would just pop in, you know,
right.
Someone like when they load the milk in from the refrigerator section and you're on the outside of that.
Right. It's always full.
Yeah. So someone's always pushing the new milk up or the old milk up with the
but
new
maybe
milk.
Maybe there's
behind
something
it.
To be said that there's fruit cocktail now because it's fruit, but it's a little changed. I mean, I know I'm trying to read into
changed.
It a little bit.
Well, that's the thing. Like, these are all things we should be reading into. It's just not the same.
And I think first off, what I love about this particular episode is they kind of, the Colony House, who already has let their hair down a lot, we really see them let their hair down. I mean, and what I mean by that is I look at Donna, you know, it's the first time really since we've met her that she was happy.
She like, was happy.
She was just a normal mom type figure.
Yeah, she
and
showed joy.
She did show a lot of joy and she
love.
Talked about how Fatima has really changed the dynamic. And I guess she brought weed with her.
Yeah, she was planting it. So maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But the vegetable garden and the this and the that. Yeah. And I also go back to the conversation with Julie and her about, you know, they were talking about Trudy and she's like, oh, well, that's something that's what a super sweet person would say about someone that she it's doesn't annoying. Like.
Yeah.
Or that's annoying or whatever. Yeah. And I just find that it was a nice moment. I love the gift that Donna gave her.
Yeah.
Which was a dream catcher.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was just sweet.
An appropriate gift for a place like that.
You think? I mean, it's the only gift.
I'm surprised there isn't one over every single like bed and doorway and stuff.
They used all the string to tie the curtains and knots. That's why they don't make them. But I mean, I think that, you know, Trudy had her moment. You know, she was kind of like the wallflower of the party, and Fatima came in, she gave her the sweater that she always wanted. And I think that that was kind of a nice little sweet moment. What I did find interesting about the whole thing was Fatima had kissed some random woman, Stacy, and which was not a big deal. I mean, okay, fine, whatever. But then Julie asked to kiss her that way, and then it just turned into like this whole thing.
It was a weird thing. Like, I just looked at it as Julie thinking that she was the closest person aside from Ellis to Fatima. And when she saw that intimacy between Fatima and, you know, and it just seemed to me that she wanted, like, she felt threatened by someone that she thought was closer and wanted the same thing.
Well, I think Julie is just in a weird place.
Yeah, she's 17
and she's like part of their little group, but she's not.
Yeah,
I mean, she's family, but she's not.
Yeah. And, well, because Ellis says to her, how are my girls?
Right.
You know, how are my girls? So she feels like she's a part of something, and then, you know, finds out that, you know, Ellis is Fatima's person. She just fools around with Stacy.
They just have an open relationship.
Yeah.
Just like everything else in Colony House.
Yeah. And, you know, why is Victor living in Colony House?
That is a good question.
Donna will take care of him, or was he always living there? Because, you know, he looks pretty settled in that room.
Yes.
Way up at the top.
Yes.
Like, maybe he picked it first and then others came.
Now, a couple of other scenes, and I know one of your topics is this, so please jump in at any point. I know you have anyways. It is when Ellis gets into a little disagreement with one of the other people, the older
guy
gentleman.
That knows everything. That's what I'm calling him, the know-it-all guy.
And they were talking about dimensions and everything else.
Yeah.
And Ellis basically tells him to shut up and all this other stuff. He's just about to fight him and they pull him away. And then he says, you know, shut up before you start shooting up the place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, Donna says something.
Yeah.
You know, like mother, like son. And then, of course, Donna punches him out.
Oh, she clocked him. It was awesome.
And I just, you know, that's an interesting piece because we got to figure out what that all means.
Yeah. And it's just one more piece of information about his mom. You know, we've learned that she's dead. We've learned that her name was Abby. And now there's this insinuation that she shot something up, you know, was kind of wild with a gun or something. So she shot up the place. So there's more to the story.
Of course.
That we are slowly getting piece by piece.
So then
he's an animal like his mother.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then
an animal.
Kevin, the dumbest person in the whole entire world.
Oh my God. But yeah, but
he got played like a violin.
Oh my God.
I mean, if she just said, "It's not you, it's me," I would have like fallen off my friggin' chair.
Oh
so,
my God. Are you
monster girl, whatever you want to call her.
Are you disgusted by me?
You're I'm going to go away. Yeah. You don't love me.
You have no idea how lonely it is out here.
And
it's not my choice to be this way, you know.
And he says to her, but
goodbye, Kevin.
There's a party downstairs and all I want to be is with you.
Right.
And then dumbass Kevin decides to open up the window.
Yeah.
And I have next to that, what the fuck?
I know. You know, this is defense, how I got my fifth husband with that conversation.
Okay. I have to say, she played it really, really cool.
She did, but that's what they do.
No, what I mean by like, she did actually kiss him.
Yeah.
Before her fingers turned into claws and then ripped his friggin' head off.
Yeah.
And what I love about the whole scene, you know, they break away and all this other stuff.
Well, but I love the look on his face. Like,
oh my God.
I'm like, then, Kevin, how long have you been you? This is not the first time something like this has happened to you.
He's an
and
idiot.
You fall for it every time.
So she opens the window and then I tried.
Close. Oh, yeah.
I tried my hardest. I looked. I could only find a milkman, a bride, a black girl in a 60s dress.
Okay.
White dress.
Yeah, like I couldn't tell. Like I was looking, I rewound, and of course I paused. And the black girl in the white dress
freaked me out.
She was creepy. She was so good. But at first I thought she was some kind of nurse because it was like she looked like a rectangle from that angle and distance.
It wasn't
until we saw her
on the steps coming down the steps.
Yeah. And we're like, okay, that's who was in that dress. And the dress was filthy. I'm like, if you're going to be one of those monsters, try not to get stuck in white because it is not going to stay that way. And why aren't they all like constantly covered with blood, you know, that stains their clothes and stuff? I mean, I know we saw Jasmine try to wipe it off her collar, but it didn't come off. It was still there. It was interesting that she was trying to get it off her collar. Like but it mattered.
What I loved about the whole celebration was,
yeah,
they're all sitting there and the guy, the annoying guy,
yeah,
is just sitting there and all you hear is thud, thud. And he looks up and the creepiest effing monster.
That guy
could scare. Gosh. I mean, he was the scariest friggin' thing I've ever seen.
You know what he reminds me of is, remember the family photos, the weird family photos that came out a while ago? Like,
yes.
He would be in those pictures.
He was all the mother, father, sister, and brother.
Oh yes, exactly. It's just that look, like if he was a person before, what the heck did he look like?
He was weird before. He's a weird monster. He's going to be weird in the afterlife.
I wonder if these are all like serial killers or murderers and stuff. And that's why they've been condemned to this.
Well, all hell breaks loose.
Yes.
They're all panicking, of course.
It was so exciting.
And one thing that, you know, everybody kept talking about and what saved them was follow protocol.
Yeah.
Get your buddy.
Yeah.
All this other stuff.
Yep.
And what I love is right before, as this is all happening, Julie knocks on the door to Victor.
Yeah.
Which is the creepiest thing. When you think about it, it's the weirdest pairing,
right?
But it's the best for the story.
Mm.
And she's asking him the tough questions. you know, why did you start digging all these holes? Why did you say this is the first time in a long time there was double cars? All these type of things that I don't want to talk about.
What are these license plates for?
And what I love about him, as soon as he realized what had happened in the house, it starts.
Yeah.
And he's got the rope and the this and the that. Yeah. And then you know, the more and more I watch this show, the more and more I'm like, Victor's the sane one in all this.
I know.
I mean, like,
well, he's had the most practice. Like, I'm he's just saying, just another anniversary party.
I mean, so they go down the thing, and of course, the boy in white, who, on a total side note, which I find really, really awesome, liked one of our posts, but that's a whole nother issue.
I know. Like,
I'm sorry. I had to throw it out there. And if he does listen to the podcast, you're always welcome. He doesn't say very much. So it'll be a really short interview on the podcast, but there's a lot of hand signals that'll be going on.
Yeah. Yeah. We can see him.
We can see him, and he'll just glow. He's great. He's great at Halloween because we don't have to use a flashlight.
Oh my gosh. That will be an awesome Halloween costume for somebody.
So if listeners, if you want to dress in your favorite from outfit, you know, I could be Ellis, but I'm not. I am too short for my weight. I have a six pack, maybe a whole keg. It's just you can't see the six pack under all that other stuff. But I look exactly like him in my own mind.
I can verify this.
And Lizzie looks exactly like Fatima.
Donna. I look like Donna.
You're a thinner Donna. You're a much thinner Donna.
I don't know.
But you have her spirit.
Maybe.
Because I could totally see you running the
walking
show.
Walking somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, folks, I'm scared to death of Lizzie because she's just.
No.
No, that's not true. But no, I love how they did have the protocol. And the one thing that I kind of thought about was, you know, they hate the town until they need them.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder what the protocol for the town is. If the town is ever in peril like that, do they have to...
Well, they don't have any cars because all the cars...
They don't have any cars. Yeah, nothing's working down there. So they're kind of stuck. But even, you know, Victor has his plan that he's probably implemented a time or two. Just that he's been ready for this night for a long time. You know, hence all the graves he dug. But then he says to Julie, like, we got to go to the trees. And I got to tell you, I can't remember if I already told you this, and I meant to send you this picture. I found a faraway tree in the woods a couple weeks ago. I took a picture. I didn't jump in.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you should say that. This has nothing to do with From, but a bunch of the Zed heads, we all play this game called Dead by Daylight, okay? And the object of the game is you have a monster that's trying to attack you, and you're supposed to fix generators. And if you fix 5 generators, you get to leave the, you know, go out the door. So the other day, I'm driving along, and I see a generator on the corner. And I'm like, I took a picture of it. I said to my friend, oh, my God, there's a generator. We have to fix it before, you know, Michael Myers comes or whoever shows up. So it's just funny when you start getting into all this, you start seeing these things. And we're, you know, we're both drowned into it. And, you know, growing up, I grew up in a large Victorian house. So Colony House has a special meaning to me in terms of it's a little place like home.
Yeah.
But I just love the fact that, all that being said, Ellis was drunk. He falls off the roof.
Yeah.
His shoulders all busted up. And those creepy people couldn't go any slower. And they don't have to. No, I'm just saying it's just amazing how, as slow as they were going, you think you could outrun them, but you can't. Yeah,
you can't. And I loved how, like, when they're getting out of the van, they're like, hey, do you folks need some help?
Oh, I know.
It's like, not from you. Oh my God.
And then after all that, Fatima smartly goes in the vestibule between the door, outside door and the inside of the house, shuts it all down and puts the talisman on and prays to whatever. And the monsters are like, oh, let us play, you know.
No, they're like taunting them.
And I can't even imagine what that night would be like. It would probably be the same. And she brings it up to Ellis, you know, why, how did you know this would work? She's like, it worked in the RV.
Yeah.
And that must have been a terrifying night as well.
Yeah. And, you know, that was real quick thinking on her part, realizing, wait a minute, there's a talisman just inside. And then we have a vestibule. If I can get in there and close the door.
Well, she's Fatima. We'll be okay. She's all knowing, hot.
Yeah. She's smart.
She is every woman.
She is wicked smart.
She's wicked smart.
Oh, that's good.
But yeah, no, I think I just found it so amazing how well it was done. I mean, I'm still mad at Kevin for opening the friggin' door. But what's interesting is, and I know this is another point, but when Jim and Tabitha are talking on the kitchen table, right before all hell breaks loose, they're talking about their son upstairs.
Yeah.
Well, we bolted all the windows. We did everything they can. And they talked about Donna. Donna's got everything under control. She knows what to do. It's like the precursor to everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always remember, like, you're watching one of those World War II movies and the one guy's, what are you going to do when you get back? Oh, I'm going to get a hot dog and go to, you know, Dodger Stadium. Bam, yeah. Right in the head. And he's down. I mean, it couldn't have been filmed any better.
So good.
So I'm not going to get into what happens when they get to the town, because I know that's probably one of your points, but let's just say they get to town. Everybody gets out of the house. You know, those two were in the vestibule and Victor was right, because he dug enough graves for all the dead. Do you have anything to add to the party?
I have a list. You know,
please.
Kevin, the guy that won't shut up, and Trudy was number two, and then Kotri, but we'll talk about him later. The only thought I have right off is I was surprised that none of those monsters jumped in the van while everyone was in there. That would have been a bloodbath.
Yes, sir.
You know, you would kind of think like they might step it up a second just to get in there with all that food in there.
But you know what? There could be some defined rules that we just don't know about yet.
Because we don't see them move fast. We've never seen them move fast. It's ever. Not like they run. They just walk they're all walking at the same pace. So I think you're right. I think there is some established protocol for them as well.
To your point, he had said, Kevin, the biggest jackass of the world, your hands were warm.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I find interesting too.
Yeah. Because when, you know, vampire lore is that they're cold. Their skin
is cold.
And
they just look cold.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're kind of grayish. The other thing that I thought was interesting was the monsters knew Trudy's name. And then they're like, how do you know my name? She's like, we know everybody. We know everything.
Yeah, we know everyone's name.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Do you have anything else?
I think if I have party stuff, it just comes up in my points.
Okay.
So
what's your next one?
My next one I'm going to talk about is Kotri. Back to Kotri. So he had approached Boyd just at sunset, and Boyd's like, great, we're going to have a sleepover, which I was like,
love that line.
Yeah.
I have to say he is such a great actor, and I haven't seen Oz yet, because that's a whole nother mindset or whatever.
It is.
And I have not seen Lost, which I know is a whole nother wackiness, but he just has the best one-liners.
Yeah.
Dry. I was like, that's pretty much what's going to happen when I have a little sleepover.
Yeah. And gosh, imagine if the same person that you can't stand shows up at your house every night like that. And you're just like, now you're stuck with them.
I know.
So he finally tells Boyd about Sarah, and, you know, Boyd is instantly pissed because he's like, you made me put Frank in the box. And by all rights, Sarah should be going in that box, but yet you've saved her. And, you know, Khatri has a good reason, because if God spoke to him, there's some validity as far as he's concerned that is hearing voices and that they're real. So he believes it, especially after she draws the picture of the candy bar wrapper. So he talks about that, and he says that whatever it is, as far as the voices, he's saying that it's part of the fabric of this place, that there is an other. There's some kind of entity, at least one. Actually, it could be one, it could be two. We don't know if the voices that Sarah is hearing are the monsters, or if there's something else.
What I also find fascinating about this whole storyline is they are, to Jade's point, is they are trying to find a way out.
Yeah.
They aren't complacent.
Right.
But they still have to survive.
Right.
So there's a difference between just surviving and not still being productive towards
right.
what's the ultimate goal. And I
right.
just find that that's an important thing, especially since it was such Jade-centric with him being so passionate about nobody is doing anything. Now, there's
right.
probably people that aren't doing anything.
Yeah, but, like, it seems like a lot of people at Colony House.
But, you know, at the same time, there's people that are thinking about this. And I think they're always thinking about it. Everybody
yeah,
is.
Like, how do I get out of this?
You know what? You know, like I said, the dimensions and whatever else.
Yeah.
But yeah, that I didn't particularly care for that conversation between
Why?
Those two. Not because not because it wasn't a great conversation. It was a great conversation. It just was so heavy. And I'm like, I don't want to watch this. I know that came out bad. It's not that I did. It's just like, I only wanted to watch it once. It's like, I know
yeah.
this is just bad. This is not good stuff. You know, it was so serious and heavy.
Yeah.
And I liked it. It was what had to be done. I just was like, oh.
Yeah.
It's like when you get in trouble and you have to go to the principal's office and you know it's not going to be good. And it's
yeah.
just, oh, but you know you have to take it. It's
yeah.
like taking your medicine. That's what I mean. It's not that it was bad in any way. It was acted well, seen
yeah.
well. It's just I just did not want to. Oh, I knew nothing good could have come out of that conversation.
Oh my gosh. Like, I love those kind of conversations.
Yeah, no, I like rainbows and unicorns. No.
Okay. I'm not. I'm like, I can have those too, but
I know. I just knew it was just going to be bad. And I'm just happy that we both in the last podcast talked about what could Father Khatri's secret be.
Yeah.
And it was nothing bad in the sense of he didn't molest anybody.
No.
It was actually something that was a bad choice, but it
yeah.
wasn't on that other level.
Yeah. Like, he didn't intentionally hurt somebody.
Yeah. It wasn't. He's not a bad man. He just made a bad choice.
Yeah.
Or a bad instinct.
Yeah. He took his mind off his flock.
Right.
You know? I don't know what this word is, and I think Khatri might have said that Sarah is a variable. I think that's what that word is, but I'm not sure. But he tells Boyd that Boyd's journey is not a coincidence. And he's saying that his own journey is not a coincidence. It's brought all of these people into the same place. And he uses the word providence, which has been with me for the last week. Him saying, you know, talking about his congregation, and then he used the word providence, you know, it gave me an idea of something I'm going to use in my book 5 of my zombie series. So, but, you know, providence, like there's a city in Rhode Island called Providence. It was the first city in Rhode Island, and it was founded by a religious man named Roger Williams,
right,
who was, you know, thrown out of Massachusetts because he believed a little bit differently. It's funny.
Was he ultra conservative?
I forget what his difference was. I mean, they ended up hating the Quakers because, you know, the Quakers were reading the Bible, you know, kind of thinking they could have a two-way conversation with God. And it's just interesting that they leave Europe so that they could go someplace to worship freely. They get here and then they clamp down and they're just like, if you don't worship like us, you're not welcome, you know? And well, so they drive out Roger Williams, and
those in power create the rules. And
yeah,
when you're on the bottom, when you finally get to the top,
yeah,
then you decide that, you know, everything is the way it should be, or these are the new rules.
Yeah.
And, you know, from other shows that we've watched, we've seen that for the last 10 seasons or 11 seasons with The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
It's like you always have that group, and then they become in power, and they're just as, and they always say absolute power corrupts absolutely. So,
right. So
providence,
it's just the guidance of God. You know, that's what that word means. It's guiding you. God is guiding you somewhere. And so Khatri is saying that this is God's will. Like, he's looking at this as something to do with God. You know, that's why they're all there. It's God's will that they're all there. It's no accident.
Well, I mean, I do believe in my own life, things do happen for a reason. And
yeah,
I mean, the fact that we're even podcasting together, you being in Atlanta, me being in New Jersey, is kind of pretty unique as well.
Yeah.
And I think that we have to just figure out what the reason is in this world. But I also do acknowledge that whoever has created this world, or whoever picks the people, or they pick themselves, it seems like they pick certain people for certain situations.
Yeah.
And we still don't know what that all means, but it's all part of God's plan, so to speak.
Yeah. And that's what he's saying. It's all God's plan. So, yeah. So that's my Father Khatri, the end of Father Khatri. And when he's killed, he's like, it wasn't supposed to happen like this.
Why don't you just try to explain what happened to Father Khatri to kind of put a bow on it, or in this case, say,
all right,
tourniquet.
So yeah. So the van pulls up in front of the sheriff's office, and Donna gets everybody out of the van. And there's a lot of people in that van. And all I could think of is, you know, I've done some background work. I don't know if you have, but I can just see that scene where the other side of the van is open and they're just shuffling people through.
Oh, it was a total clown car.
Yeah.
There was no way there was that many people in that van.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if they had to do something like that, if that was real life, they would. But yeah. But so they're all getting out and Khatri's trying to help them. And, you know, the monsters are being kind and they're offering help as well. But, you know, Khatri takes too long and one of them shows up behind him and says, Father. And when he turns to look, it catches him on his face and his neck and cuts his jugular. and he dies. And he's just like, it wasn't supposed to happen like this. And, you know, he asks everyone to pray with him. They bring him inside and they all pray with him and he dies. So the whole thing is that it could just be if it is what he says it is, that God is running this. His job was done.
True.
So
true.
Yeah. You know, he was going to go on the journey with Boyd and Sarah. So now it's down to Boyd and Sarah going on this journey. And the thing is, I kind of wanted to see it all unfold with Khatri. So,
and I think they could have had a couple of twists and turns with Khatri to make him look like he's worse than he is. And then all of a sudden he has redemption or non, you know what I mean? And it's just a shame that he's left the show so early on.
Yeah.
You know what he reminds me of? And I know we keep going back to Walking Dead, but John Bernthal.
Yeah.
It's like he needed to go, but we would have loved to have seen him now.
Stay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like if he had branched off and, you know, left the others when he was going to, and then comes back in and he's this big, like he would have been a great Negan.
Oh my gosh.
It would have been amazing if it had turned out that he was Negan.
Or if him against the Whisperers, holy cow.
Yeah.
That would have been great stuff.
It would have been good to see how bad he actually could have been.
Right.
Because he was going bad. But I'm, you know, for anyone to go, what I'm wondering is if they've reached their point of redemption. Because the thing was, Trudy was regarded as just being annoying. You know, she would take other people's stuff and then get, you know, pissy if they took hers. And she was I understand the attraction to a pillow because I have a Casper pillow that I've named Ken and we have quite a relationship. But at any rate, Ken is my sixth husband, but she feels like an outsider, like nobody likes her. And she wants Fatima to like her. And Fatima finally says, you know, basically, hey, we're all stuck here together. We might as well make the most of it. And, you know, to show, you know, to cement that I care about you, I mean what I say, I'm going to give you this sweater. And Trudy is killed on her way to go give her pillow to Fatima. So I think for Trudy, she came full circle. So it was okay for her to die, that she realized that she had self-worth, that people could care about her, that sort of thing.
She died so awful.
Yeah, it was awful. But that's how they all die.
No, I know.
It's not pretty, you know? And so when Khatri dies, it might have just been for him to deliver the message, because there is no way that Boyd was going to believe that Sarah was hearing voices and that these voices were legitimate. He needed the bridge between Sarah and himself, and the person that would believe it and understand it would be Khatri. So now that he established that conduit, he could go. That's just my on the spot analysis.
Speaking of conduits, my next point, if you have your bow on your last point.
Yes, there's a bow.
Has to be, and I say this every single week, the funniest scenes in the whole entire show. Okay.
Jade
and Kenny and his mother have to be, without a doubt, the funniest thing I've ever seen. It was he was a 12-year-old.
He was a 12-year-old. And it makes me wonder if his parents didn't care about him, because he likes it. Did you notice he's starting to speak Cantonese?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he's smart enough where he can interpret language quickly and start to learn it so that he can, because she comes in and he's like, I'm not going to dinner. And she comes in and she's like, you better get your ass down there and eat dinner. I didn't slave over a hot stove for you to just sit up here and not eat my dinner. Oh, my God.
And poor Kenny is just like the middle child. Just yeah. Do it already. Just do it.
Come on. You don't bring her wrath on us.
And then he yells at him like they're brothers. Why are you writing my books? What do you want me to do? Write on the walls? That's insane.
Yeah. As
then, you know, that Jim did it.
But yeah.
Again, I love how they always have a little nugget with Jade.
Yeah. Like there's always that nice little thing,
whether it's the symbol, but this week it was the picture of Victor when he was a kid. And who's the guy? Is that his dad?
Yeah. You know what? The funny thing was, at first I was like, that guy does not look anything like Victor would look at that age. I didn't catch him in the background,
but that was the kid. Yeah. That was the kid that when they had the flashback, that was the same.
Yeah.
Kid.
Yeah.
That was really fascinating. And again, we got to find out more. I mean, that's the great thing about this show. When we answer one question, we get three.
Yeah. But we get answers. And to me, this show is feeling like Payback from Lost.
Okay.
And they are fixing what was broken and they're making sure that they're connecting the dots. There's the picture and it's a Polaroid, and of course we've been looking at this stuff and trying to figure out the timeline of when Victor was that little boy. And I mean, how old is Victor? Is he 50?
Well, I'm thinking he's a little bit older because I'm 50.
Yeah. Or was he 56?
I think he might be a little bit older. I wouldn't be surprised if he's 56.
Didn't they say how old he was? Because I remember saying, because I'm 56 and I'm thinking.
You look so much better than he does.
Well, I haven't been, you know, under the same kind of stress.
You think? No, I mean, he's got, obviously he has to be over 50.
Yeah, but he's over 50, which that puts him, his birthday is sometime, he was born sometime between 65 and 70.
Right.
Or he's a little bit older. But I remember I was 13 and we had gotten a Polaroid camera, which would have made that about 78 or so. But I think they'd been out a year maybe before we got one. We got one because we were going to our grandparents' house so we could take pictures. So I'm trying to think, because he's younger. If that was 1978 in that picture, or even 77, what is he like? Maybe 10?
Maybe.
All right. So he's 3 or 4 years younger than me, if that is the case.
Right.
It was, I mean, that guy in the car. Could've, I didn't get a 50s. Good look. Well, no, that guy looked like he was about 30-ish.
You think he was that young? All right.
Well, because like people looked different back then.
People, like, I looked at my dad who passed when he was 50, and he had the gray hair. He had, he was just, they looked older.
They looked older back then. But, you know, it was hard to say. You couldn't get enough information off the cars, I don't think. Or I couldn't get enough information so that I could be like, this car is about a 19 whatever. You know,
and, you know, something, and this is why, you know, listeners, we'd love to hear your opinions on this, because
there's a car expert out there.
Well, and not even that, it's just frustrating.
Yeah.
To try to figure this out. And we're all trying to piece it together.
Right. So. And the thing is, the way he's walking by, it looks like the diner has a full parking lot and he's walking through the parking lot. My guess is that this is before everything happened. And it might be worth it to go back to that Victor episode when he, when, you know, the whole town is in the street to see if we can find that guy.
Yeah, that might be worth a second look.
Yeah.
I mean, because there was bodies.
Yeah, bodies everywhere. Yeah.
Maybe that's where Victor grew up and all of a sudden became from.
That's what I think. I think he was there at the beginning.
Yeah.
Whether he grew up there or they just were passing through. You know, he's yet to speak about any family or anything like that. So that was going to be one of my points, but mostly because Jade was learning to speak Cantonese.
Yeah, I mean, Jade always kills it. There wasn't a lot of scenes with those three, but they stole the show.
Oh,
at least
yeah.
for me, they steal the show every time they're on.
They're funny. And this is the notebook. Like, he realizes two pages are stuck together. And this is the notebook that Mrs. Liu gave him. And that's where the picture comes from. And the book is just page after page of those symbols. And there's two pages, you know, stuck together. And that picture was purposely put in there.
So it Victor's, or was it his parents or relatives or whatever?
Whose notebook was that? Yeah.
Or it could be somebody just random.
Yeah. That was putting together the pieces.
Right.
Or maybe someone that was there that day, or maybe the person that took the Polaroid. We don't know yet. I'll tell you, like, if this show didn't get a second season, so many kind of like, oh my God, we've got to knot these threads, you know? Okay, there's that. We did that.
Is there any other point about Jade that you wanted to make on it?
No.
Okay. What's your next one?
Let's see. It's kind of like the party took up a bunch of points, but Victor puts, after Victor and Julie escape from Colony House, they go to the woods, you know, and it's kind of like the boy in white is like, he shows up saying, all right, head to the trees, you know, they find a faraway tree and he's got to convince Julie to get just to climb in. When she climbs in, she lands in the root cellar.
Yeah, that was weird.
And he tells her to tell Ethan it's starting. He will know. And then she lands in the root cellar. We don't know what he does or where he goes.
Well, he said he's going to be right behind her. But also, we don't know. He also said he didn't know where those were going to go.
Yeah, he did not. Yeah, so that's a brief point that I have. You, it's your turn.
Oh, my only other real point was the fact that Tabitha and Jim need to go to a confined space class because that friggin' hole is enormous. I mean, it's boarded up. They got ladders.
Yeah,
they got also. I mean, this thing is like serious engineering going on.
Yeah,
I mean, it was more than 6 feet deep.
It was taller than her.
I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah,
and I mean, they had their kid doing it, and it was big. It was wide.
Yeah.
They still haven't found any wires.
Well, no, that they have, because if you look, there's a black, a red.
Oh yeah, red and a blue.
And the blue and the red are coming through the frame of the house. And then the black is not. So, you know, me not being an electrician and not knowing much about wiring at all. I just did, I don't go in and do major research, just kind of like answering questions for myself so that, you know, if it ties to a point or whatever. So the black wire is from an out. Yeah. All three are hot wires, which means they're live in case you don't know. But this one is from an outlet to a switch. That's what black wires are. Red wires are either for a 240 volt outlet, or it's an outlet, a 240 volt, 240 volt outlet, or it's for a wall switch. A blue wire has to do with ceiling fans or 3 to 4 way switches. You know, like when you have a light bulb that can have 3 different levels of intensity.
Right.
So that's what I learned about that. Other than that, I mean, Jim is diagramming a tower to put up at Colony House.
That was a funny scene. I forgot about that.
Yeah. But it was like, you know, he's sitting there, he's doing what he does. That's what he does. And the tower sort of looked like, you know, roller coaster support, you know.
But I love how he says, well, if I can get Boyd to do this and Colony to do that and do this, do that, well, pretty soon everybody will hate me in the whole entire place.
Yes, exactly. So, and then he reassures Tabitha, you know, like he can't, you know, Ethan can't open any doors and all the windows are nailed shut. And, you know, I did like seeing someone finally closing the curtains for the night.
Yes, finally.
Yeah. And Tabitha is super worried about Ethan and Julie, so she goes and digs in the basement. You know, so they still haven't found a source at all. And, you know, my list is not long for this, but there is something about energy here because, you know, there's the electricity, but Julie was wearing that bunny looking shirt again that has the third eye. And the third eye is about energy. It's about seeing things without eyes, you know, like seeing something that's not there, which is like the voices that are talking to Sarah, which is God talking to Khatri, that kind of thing. It's on another wavelength or dimension. So there's that other energy level that we have. So I don't know. I'm ready to talk about the mysteries.
Sure.
I don't really have anything about the town, but Colony House celebrates anniversaries. And we do have some monster notes that at least Jasmine has warm hands. I don't know if that was part of her ploy or not. It might, maybe they get warmer as they get closer to eating. It's excitement. I don't know. They know everyone's names. So whether it's a one-sided thing, this area, or a two-sided thing, it seems like information is shared in some way. And they transition into an actual monster. And I froze the frame so I could take a look at it because we got a look or a quick glimpse when Frank was in the box and they came through the side. But then there's one that's right behind Father Khatri. And when they are attacking, they change into another form. They have a bald head. They still like look humanoid, but they have a bald head, black eye sockets from what I could see. I didn't see any definition. a flat-ish kind of face. Like there's very little definition in the features. It just seems kind of flat. They have a misshapen mouth that's full of fangs.
Oh my God, that was so gross.
Yeah. And then they have weird twisty arms because when whatever that creature was, and maybe they take the form of one of the sexes and they don't actually have a sex, but we hear a female voice say father. And then when he turns, we see this arm that's winding up like, you know, she's going to throw a pitch into home base. And the arm is actually twisted like it's wound so that right. as it comes back around, it's like gathering power or whatever. And it just goes across his face and his neck, you know, with the nails. So they've got these long nails.
Right. And they're scary, dirty, gross.
Yeah. Yeah. And bullets don't affect them. Yet it makes our villagers feel better if they shoot. So they shoot.
It kind of slows them down.
Does it? It just seems like kind of like, you know, like right. just kind of bounce back, but it doesn't really do anything. So that's all I have. And for me, I discussed all my notes that I would have made through points that, you know.
Yeah, I have no notes. I mean, yeah. My main thing was the party.
Yeah.
And everybody getting out of the party.
Yeah.
And I think we covered everything that we needed to cover in terms of that. Yeah. I'm for as far as me.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I'm just looking through. Yeah, that was it. That was everything. Right. So now we can have our listeners join us.
Yes. We had a bunch of feedback.
Awesome.
I know. And I want to thank everybody for taking the time.
I know. I always want to take the time for podcasts, but I just don't often do. So.
And it comes from a couple of different ways. Some people email, some people Facebook, all sorts of different things. And, yeah. you know, we're really trying to do a good job with some of these from Facebook groups. So we got a bunch of stuff here. And why don't you read the first one?
From Jessica Evans on Facebook. Still probably one of my favorite episodes. We really got to see the monsters in action, especially Jasmine, who played the sad victim. She didn't want to be this way and then turned and killed off the guy. That's exactly what she did. This episode also gave a feel how huge this colony house was. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It was like every vantage point, they're like running down a different hall or whatever. Because at times when they were running around, I even felt lost. My biggest complaint I hated was seeing the father trying to help and dying. I actually grew to like him. Dude, you're so not alone, Jessica.
We all liked him.
Yeah, we did. I didn't have a load of questions on this episode. I eat it as more of a filler, something we knew was going to happen, a massacre of sorts at some point, which she's right. There has to be a culling at some point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Jeremy Carrion
yeah.
says, when Jasmine smirks as porn stash guy was embracing her, i.e. Kevin, yeah. It looks like the air got sucked out of the room.
Yeah.
And it's so true.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when she looks at him, you know, Kevin / now porn stash guy, he just, for that one moment, it was like satisfaction. And then she just went chomp. And what I find interesting about the monsters is in this whole episode, they cut the tongues out so people can't yell.
Right. They don't want to hear it.
Yeah, they can't hear them.
No, they don't want to hear it.
No, I'm saying.
Oh, wait, no one else can hear him.
No one else can hear him.
Yeah.
So they can't even like say help or run.
Yeah.
So,
oh, poor Kevin.
One of our best listeners from, I think it's California, Alma. Why don't you read Alma's good stuff?
Okay. So this is from Alma Contreras. And, you know, thanks everybody that, you know, gave us some feedback. I think this is my favorite episode of the season. Not only are we celebrating one of the nicest characters in this crazy world, Fatima, but dang, all hell breaks loose at the colony house. Freaking Kevin getting fooled by that monster. This shit was crazy, scary mayhem. And you know what? The thing is, it's like, if you are suffering from loneliness, or, I mean, you know what the monsters do. Like, say something to somebody, get help before it's too late, because obviously this turned into a far bigger issue for others.
Hornstache guy had a lot going on, and he needed to freaking go for the stupidest thing in the world.
Yeah.
What's interesting is I'm surprised that nobody picked up on the flowers.
Well, wait a minute. Julie did, or at least Julie found the bouquet.
Right. That's
before
true.
Before Jasmine could get it. But no, you're right. No one said, hey, what's up with the flowers being left on the porch? You know, like, the thing is, they're so busy living, they're so busy letting everyone do their own thing that, you know, something like this could have saved a bunch of lives if someone just was like, hey, what's up? I also like getting the backstory on the priest. I did too. And what exactly is Tabitha trying to find with all this digging? China. I really don't. Yeah, maybe China or the truth. I really don't think anything good will come from it. Well, I think she's getting quite a workout. So she's going to get some guns, you know. Sun's out, guns out.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
I don't know about y'all, but I don't seem to ever get answers to my questions, except for now we know why all the graves were dug up. Can't wait to hear y'all's thoughts. Y'all is one of my favorite words.
Well, she is the best. And yeah, thank you so much for your wonderful feedback.
Yes.
And you win a prize. A specially dug grave from Victor. Only six left.
Yeah, there you go.
We do have some calls, and Steve Brown did call for last week, even though he was on hiatus/vacation in the 50th state of the Union, which is Alaska.
Lucky
and
dog.
Let's see what Steve has to say.
Hey, Alex and Lizzie. Oh, good. There's a previously on. This is from book 74. Oh, this is Steve, in case you didn't know. Wow, that was cold, Boyd. I know it's the previously on part of it. That he's like, if she comes back, we'll handle it. If she doesn't come back before dark, it'll be handled. My knees aren't quite where they used to be either, Father. Oh, he's got her tied up in the basement. She's not ran out into the woods. I mean, theoretically, if you take a tent, right, with you and you hang the talisman in the door of the tent, wouldn't that be the same thing? It is strange that not even anyone had a Bible that they were traveling with, like an actual Bible. I mean, I have lots of them. Book 74, he said the title of the episode, Mic Drop. Okay, so they're going to try to figure out where the light is coming from. I don't understand that part of it. I think I remember something about this, but I don't remember it. What is this now? Dead bodies hanging from the tree, bleeding on him. Is he hallucinating? Some old-time soldier just shot at him? Wow, that was quite a hallucination. They watched him bury a bag. So the voices are talking to her and giving her proof that it's real. Where is your mother? In the basement. How could a bracelet that he lost, it was the girl's birthday when she was born, be in this town? Oh, so the bag he buried had this chocolate bar in it, this Cosmo bar, and she drew the logo. Whoa. Well, I do not remember what happens after this with the woman outside and the flowers. So can't wait to hear you guys talk about this one. Talk to you later.
Well, Steve, as always, you know, you never disappoint. Hopefully we can get some live Steve for next episode or end this episode, and we will we'll always enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I heard him.
Yeah. I just wasn't sure. So we have another voicemail from Joe. This time she decided to do, instead of an email, she did a voicemail. And she makes a very good point to explain what she's going to tell you before she tells you. And here we go.
Hi, Lizzie and Alex. It's Jodie from Australia here. My pronouns are she, her, and it's nice to meet you all and your listeners, my fellow Podcastica fans. Thank you very much for reading my email on the last episode. It was quite thrilling to hear your thoughts on my observations. I decided to take you up on your invite to provide a voice recording this week. I'm a bit nervous. I've never done this before. I've been a Podcastica listener for years, and I've always admired the way Steve does his live Steves. His comments are always really insightful, and I don't know how he does that in the moment. But given you mentioned Steve is away on holiday, I thought I would do a tribute to him. So this is my live Jodie in honour of live Steve. I hope I do it justice. Oh, and a couple of disclaimers. I haven't been travelling in the last 3 years for obvious reasons, so my accent may have gone full Aussie in that time. Let me know if you can't understand any of my Southern Hemisphere anachronisms, and I'll translate into American English for you. Also, as you may know, Australians swear a lot, so I do apologise if I offend with any bombs I drop. I will try and avoid it, but being realistic, it's unlikely I'll be completely successful. Now, with all of that said, here we go. This is my thoughts for my live Jodie for From Season 1, Episode 7. So I think it's adorable that they've referenced the faraway trees in here, because I used to read a lot of Enid Blyton books in my childhood, and it was The Magic Faraway Tree was always a very innocent, beautiful book to read. And the reference to the faraway tree just made me think of that immediately. So it was this weird, innocent memory from childhood being imposed onto this terrifying show that I'm obsessed with. I don't think it's a very good sign that Ellis has started drinking early at a party that's supposed to be celebrating Fatima's anniversary. I wonder what's going on with him.
Pre-game. It's a pre-game.
I feel like there might be like a throuple situation coming on with these three. Just the way Ellis said, my girls, and I don't know. Something's making me think that way. Okay, I do not think it's a good sign that in all these years, the one thing that's changed is that the peaches are gone. I'm sensing doom. I just adored Boyd and his little bell. He's the best. All right, Jade does make me laugh. I'm not going to lie. He refers to writing on the walls like a psychopath when Jim and his family have just been doing exactly that. I feel like this conversation between Jim and his wife has a little bit of foreshadowing. Like, he references the antenna he's trying to build as failing, and she references, he says falling into the hole she's digging in the basement. Like, does that mean the antenna is going to fail and she's going to fall, or he's going to fall into the hole in the basement? I love Donna. The priest reciting this story is just, it's heartbreaking, but he's so, the feeling of helplessness that he's demonstrating is really strong. So wait, the priest was fleeing something he was angry about, like an injustice that he couldn't do anything about. And Jim and his family were fleeing an injustice that they couldn't do anything about. I wonder if there's a connection there. Oh, and both injustices are with kids, which supports your theory, the theory that you guys have been floating. Oh, I think we need to talk about Kevin. Kevin, that monster vagina is not a place you want to go, mate. Stay away from it, please. Stay strong, Kevin. That's so funny. Monster lady, everybody's afraid of you. Oh my God. Kevin, don't do it. Don't do it. Maybe if you stopped eating people, lady, you'd have some friends. Kevin, stop it. Don't do it. Kevin. Oh, she promised him. Uh-oh. And he's doing it. Kevin, I'm so disappointed in you.
We are too.
I think a lot of people are about to die. Very constructive use of the F-bomb by Ellis here. Definitely admire it. Whoa, what was that comment? Like mother, like son? Excuse me? Oh, Kevin. Oh, Kevin. Like, I get that her skirt is short and she's quite pretty right now, but come on, dude. Oh, they're kissing. I feel like she's going to eat his face. Like, not in the good way.
Bingo.
Oh, she literally ate his face. It was literal. Trudy saying she doesn't think she'll get a party feels to me like more foreshadowing. Like, this is not going in a great direction with the foreshadowing. This, whoa, Fatima's getting her naked? Oh, no, giving her the shirt. That's lovely. I thought it was going to be sexy. Thank goodness it's not. Oh, Julie, you're the sweetest. Oh my God.
I was just kidding. This is so brave. No, you
know
what? I just
forget it. Oh no. Julie, don't be embarrassed. That was beautiful. You did so well. You did so good, girl. See, now Jim's wife just said, with the hole, we'll go as deep as we have to. I feel like that's some more foreshadowing. How deep are they going to have to go? Like, this is a pretty intensely big hole already. Oh, he's giving her a massage. That's really sweet. I feel like these guys are really reconnecting the more time they spend in this town, which is lovely. But again, foreshadowing, like the closer they get, I feel like the more at risk one of them is at for cocking it.
I'm going to cut this down.
Oh, maybe this is going to get sexy. Oh, Kevin was in pieces. Oh my God. Ugh. Really? She's trying to clean off her white collar? She's trying to clean the blood, Kevin's blood, off her white... Oh, this is monstrous. Yep, there's about to be a massacre. That window is wide open. And here they come for dinner. There's the milkman. Come to get his chow. Oh, this is lovely. Julie's run to Victor for support. It's really nice that... Like, Jim can't see it because he's a grown-up, but both the kids see that Victor is safe, that he's, you know, he's basically one of them because he's basically a 10-year-old in a 40-year-old man's body, 50-year-old man. Let's be generous. Oh, my God. I really hope both of them don't die. I really don't want either of these two to die. I like them both so much. Victor's having a typical 10-year-old reaction. Don't touch my stuff. Julie, don't touch my stuff. All right, we got a new mystery here. Who's the guy in the photograph Jay just found? Oh, Trudy talking to her pillow is just the sweetest thing. No, Trudy, no, no! Oh, Trudy! Well, that's terrifying. Look, I'm going to be honest. I'm not down with string theory guy on the stairs. He can be eaten. Eat him. That's fine. Oh my god, the smile! Oh! I feel like these monsters are super, super inefficient because they're moving so slowly. What's with that? Okay, I'm relieved they have a protocol. Oh my god. Julie! Listen to Victor and go! Flee! Victor is legit having a full-on hero moment right now. Loving this for him. Watching this is so stressful right now. Oh, little boy in white. Are you evil? Are you good? What's going on? To the trees! To the trees! To the faraway tree! Oh my god, Ellis is still in the house. Oh no, this is... Oh no, please no. Please no. Boyd will never come back from that. So there's something about Monster Boy, like, touching the leaves and running his hand along the banister. Like, he needs to... ground himself in physical touch somehow for some reason. Probably not a thing. Might be a thing. No! Ellis, no! Oh my god, oh my god. Ellis, Ellis, just... Oh yeah, out the window. That's good, that's good. Go, baby, go! Oh. Okay, okay, you two, Fatima, Ellis, run! Run from the monsters who were walking annoyingly slow. Oh yeah, oh yeah, hero moment for Fatima. Here we go, babe. Do your thing. What you gonna do? Yes! Oh, damn. You are smart, lady. And see the monsters saying, oh, don't be like that. We were having so much fun. Kind of brings me back to the amusement park idea that maybe the monsters are people who pay to do this to these people.
That's an interesting thought.
And in the midst
thought.
Of all this horror, Fatima and Ellis telling each other they love each other is just really beautiful. So Victor saying the kid brother, I can't remember his name right now, will know what he's talking about and what's happening. It's again the theory that the kids are involved. Like this is based somehow around children and lost children and you know, deceased children and missing children and these children who are here in the town maybe. Ugh, and Priest and Boyd are being so optimistic right now and it's just carnage. Yeah, bubble burst. Come on, everybody get inside. Go. Just don't ask questions, Boyd. Get inside. Hustle, 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 hustle. No! Oh, my God. No! Oh! Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I think we just lost the priest. I think he just got his neck ripped out. Donna, keep him elevated. His neck is missing and you're going to keep him elevated? Oh, honey, I love you, but no. Oh, you guys, he dead. Ugh, Boyd saying that prayer was really sad. That was a really, really stressful episode. I feel really stressed. Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to pause for a second. All right, I did some deep breathing. I got a bit carried away, so I'm sorry this is so long, but so those are my thoughts. I love how you guys, when you do the episodes, you confirm the answers that we've already gotten, but then you also speculate as to the new questions that have inevitably arised during each episode. It really helps because sometimes we get answers, but oh my God, we just got so many more questions. It's crazy. This show is driving me crazy and I cannot stop watching. So that's kind of all I have for the episode. I did want to say really quickly, Lizzie, I went and downloaded the first book in Lizzie's Lost Girl series and, I downloaded it this morning and then started reading it on the bus. And I'm not going to lie, it was a massive strategic error because I did not want to go to work. I just wanted to keep reading and I have completely rejigged my plans for the weekend so that I can keep reading the entire series. So thank you for sharing that with us. I'm definitely going to keep reading and I really admire the fact that you've published. It's amazing. So thank you so much. Oh God, I didn't press stop.
So that is such our a nice international episode. Desk, so to speak. Yeah. And
international desk.
You know, Jody, I think Steve actually has some competition because that was without a doubt. I laughed, I cried. It was better than Cats feedback. Please feel free to send in feedback. Hopefully it's going to be a little bit shorter because we like to keep it to a certain time. But thank you so much for your live, Jody. And
that was awesome.
And I know, speaking for Lizzie, she's very happy that you have a different weekend plan because of her awesome books.
I'm touched.
I know. People actually do listen.
Yes. That was awesome. That was awesome.
So on that lovely note, do you have anything else, my dear?
That's it. And I think that's our show.
Well, thank you once again for...
Thank you.
Just being you and making the time to spend with me to talk about From, But
oh my God, Alex, thanks for saying yes.
Because I've been having a ball, and the best part about all this is now I can go watch episode 8 with my wife so we can find out what the hell happened.
And you know what? I forgot. There's like, I think there's 10 episodes.
Yeah, we only have a couple more episodes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And I don't want it to end, but
I'm a little sad that we're going to have to wait until next season, whenever the heck that is.
I know.
But like I said, I'm hoping we can do we'll do a recap before the next episode. And I'm hoping we can do like a theories episode. Maybe yeah. even get some of the listeners involved or whatever.
That
else.
Would be great. I think that we should. And I think that would be great if we have a live show.
That said, if you do like the podcast, and how could you not, please hit the subscribe button. And if you want to give us 5 stars, please do. I know Lizzie would give us 6 stars, but there's only 5 there.
There's only 5. I have one in my heart.
I know. Also, if you want to write in or leave a feedback, you can always go to podcastica.com for any type of feedback or whatever the heck else.
Or find out what other podcasts Podcastica is doing, because there's always something brewing in that house. Anyway, while you're there, be sure to check out the other shows at Podcastica. Ugh, why can't I say it? Podcastica. .com.
I know they just did Obi-Wan this week. Yeah. And Strange Indeed is
doing Stranger Things.
Stranger Things. They're doing one episode at a time. They're gearing up for the new Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Did you hear what's coming in September, young lady?
Jon Snow is my king.
Wait, do you know what else is coming this fall?
September? No.
Yes.
What?
The reason why I listen to you.
Oh, Tales?
Or Handmaid's did they announce? Handmaid's Tale is coming back this
year. Yes. Yes. Lord Baelish. I didn't hear that there was a launch date for that. Oh,
yeah. No, it's
God.
Coming back in the fall. So I'm pretty excited about that. And
I'm going to have so much going on between that and the final season of The Walking Dead, or the finale of The Walking Dead.
Well, and then, you know, it comes back next year, our favorite show of all time.
Can't be fair.
That was the show I was talking about. Oh, but anyway, God,
I lambasted them.
I know. That's a whole nother podcast. Yeah. But next week, I know Jody is already, because she's in Australia.
Yeah.
It's already next week there.
It's already next week. Yeah.
Yes. Next week, we're going to be covering season 1, episode 8. And it's called Broken Window, Open Door, which they should have thought about this week.
Oh, yeah. All right. So that's it. I'm excited for our show.
Thanks for listening. And the bell's ringing. So it's time to go home before it gets dark.
Yay. We're done. You need some sleep.
Was I yawning enough?
Not enough.